Drive Time on 91.3. Always on the cutting edge. Stellenbosch University is making an effort to collect oral history of the Tirfle community. Online is Professor Aslam Fattar, Research and Development Professor in Transformation at Stellenbosch University. Professor Aslam Fattar, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, Mr. Shafiq Mottin.
All right, Prof, tell us the Tirfle community, where do they come from?
MashaAllah, yes. Shafiq, your listeners may or may not know that Tirfle is an enormously, it's about a 20-kilometer square region in the northern suburbs that encompasses areas such as Ravensmead, Taro, right up into the mountain into the mountain in the northern side, out into Belleville and so on. During the declaration of apartheid in 1948, the community was obviously divided into race groups, and a lot of the colored and black communities in that area were dispossessed of their land. To make way for white communities, and particularly also in the case of Stellenbosch University, to make way for the Faculty of Medical and Health Sciences, so that by 1972, starting from about 1965, a hospital was built on the grounds where these people from the Tirfle community was forcibly removed.
Yeah, so it's basically, as people would say nowadays, it's beyond the Boerewors curtain.
Just about, yes. But that's where the Boerewors curtain starts, actually, Shafiq.
Right. And of course, I mean, the area where people were sort of displaced there became the stamping ground for low-level government civil servants who got 100% housing subsidies, etc., etc. So it became pretty much the fiefdom of Western Cape Afrikanerdom.
Indeed, exactly from that particular area of what is now known as Paro, but formerly was known as Tirfle, where mixed communities stayed formerly, but now white communities started staying. And that was the area that was cleared up for, as you say, poor white Afrikaners, light industries, railway industries. If you were a poor white, you would have been poor, but you would have been given a job, you would have been given a house, you would have been given some economic opportunity, and that is where you were started your life in the 1960s. And 50 years later, you would have been pretty middle class, because if you drive through those areas now, upmarket and middle class and very expensive.
No, absolutely. I always find it a rather fascinating part of the world because the streets are so wide you can turn an ox wagon around in the middle of them. I've always used that metaphor for it. But on a sort of a slightly more serious note in terms of this, we haven't heard very much about the Tirfle community, haven't we? And I think it's very encouraging to see you've made a call for us to collect data, particularly oral history about the area.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. So the reason why Stellenbosch University is doing it is because we have, over the last 10 years, and I've played an important role in this, hopefully, identified areas in the Western Cape where Stellenbosch University has been a beneficiary of forced removal, to the extent that when those areas were forcibly removed in Stellenbosch, in Belleville, in Tirfle, faculties of the university emerged. Literally on the blood of the people who were forcibly removed. In this case, in the 1960s, the hospital was built, and next to the hospital, the Faculty of Medical and Health Sciences were built. And here's the thing, on the Faculty of Medical and Health Sciences was a burial site, a cemetery called the Harde Kraalkie Cemetery, where about 1,000 people were buried between, say, 1910 and 1948. It was decommissioned in 1948. It laid there. The people were still buried there, some of them, because of the forced removals and the intention of the apartheid state and the university to build a medical center, medical faculty there. There was an attempted forced removal and reburial, and half of them were reburied. The other half were still, still laying in that ground. So, 50 years later, Stellenbosch University develops a restitutive approach towards the communities of which it was a part in violating, and therefore we started collecting stories, identifying people who had a family buried in that area, traced some of them, about 40 of them, begin to retell the story to lay the basis for the restitution of that site, because we want to, in a sense, symbolically restitute and return that site to the people who were violated in, who were buried there and were violated as a result.
And of course, it seems to me that the Tierflay community was quite a diverse one. You know, in those days, I would have been living right on the fringes of the city. So it wasn't just a Muslim community, it wasn't just a Christian one. It was pretty much of a mixed one, wasn't it?
It was very mixed. It was racially mixed, if I can use that language. Blacks, colors, Indians, if I can use the old racial language. And they lived together. They had a social life that started around the 1850s, because we'll be retelling the history of when it was settled under colonialism and so on. And eventually developed patterns under colonialism. Indigenous communities had lived in those areas very importantly, because that's what we're finding out as well through our research. And by 1948, it was a relatively mixed community, but the apartheid machinations in 1948 overturned all of that. Hardened racial categories started emerging. And then the clearing up started happening, and then the Tierflay community was divided into different racial groups. And forced removals had occurred. It's a very tragic history also, because just imagine, the university tries to restitute 50 years later, but we really cannot find the community who were buried there. So we're working with descendants of the community, with people who had memory of the historical site and so on. So telling the stories, what a key part of telling the story was identifying and finding these people, actually, who were able to tell us the stories of people who were buried in the Harder Clark Cemetery, and who therefore lived in the Tierflay community, in the Tierflay area.
And what sort of stories are coming out? Because it also seems as if a number of people staying there were Isitlaza, some were Old Khoi as well. And so there must be a host of really interesting stories coming out.
Indeed, all of the above. So these stories are very mixed. It's a community. Firstly, it's a family. It's of people who lived across the color line and who established social lives. They encompass stories of sport and recreation and religious life and community life generally. But then also the focus became, once we have excavated that context, on particular biographies, people who were born in the 1920s and 1930s, who may have lived in the environment, some who may have had descendants who were buried at the cemetery and so on, and people who had lived lives or kind of labor and job patterns that they had done, education schools and so on. So we were able to tell these 30 or 35 or so. So we're still collecting more stories of people and their biographies and who they live. And the point of them in the restitutionally is to say that if we are going to be doing anything meaningful, we've got to have an account of more or less who these people are. If the apartheid state had violated them and erased memory, the university 50 years later in democratic times has to make an attempt to restore memory before it can restore the dignity of these communities.
Absolutely. And final question, Professor Fattar, is the university going to make a memorial coffee table book or some kind of publication so members of the public can also be informed about Tierflay?
Yes, so methodologically, you will be happy to hear, Shafiq, that we're fairly radical. We're saying that once we've identified the communities or the descendants of the communities, we must now develop a participative approach towards these communities. So we've had about 6 or 7 community participative events for these communities to tell us how to restitute the area. So yes, there is research. Yes, there may be a book. But more importantly, we have to restitute, we have to potentially provide resources for descendants of that community in order to establish lives, educationally and so on, bursaries perhaps. We've got to have a memorial site when people can, on the cemetery, where people can come and remember. But more concretely, we also want to contribute to these communities whom we've identified, upliftment and so on and so forth. But the important point about the community participation is that they are telling us what we should and how we should be approaching restitution. It's an all-encompassing process in that sense.
I mean, Professor, as you were talking, a WhatsApp comes through here, and this is so fascinating. Assalamu alaikum. I remember my uncle stayed in Tirfle Ravensmead on Francis van Sale Avenue, Roberts Avenue. Then we had whites opposite his shop, living as one community. We still in First Avenue, alhamdulillah, and that comes from the Bray family. So you've certainly touched on a nerve.
Well, let me say that, Shafiq, if that person can Google my name and potentially send me an email, then I could potentially arrange for that story to be told. That's exactly how we're working.
Absolutely.
That's the methodology.
So this caller who's from the Bray family, just Google Professor Aslam Fattar. It's Aslam Fattar, Stellenbosch University, and please contact him. They are dying to hear from you. Anybody
Inshallah.
Who's listening to us who knows anything about Tirfle, contact Professor Aslam Fattar as part of an exciting project to tell the history and to go down the road of restitution. Professor Aslam Fattar, Research and Development Professor in Transformation at Stellenbosch University. Shukran, thanks for joining us.
Shukran, alaikum salam, wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.